Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing / pack rafting and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson. Back home from a great C2C race. From my point of view, I think from most of the racers, other than maybe one or two checkpoints that everybody had a little bit of trouble getting to, but hey, that's part of it. And if it's any consolation, I found everyone that I went to, all six of them. So, good time was had by all. So, this week's episode with Eric Caravella, and we're going to learn all about pack rafting and why you should maybe take a safety course and so you don't drown. I don't want anybody to drown. Anyway, what's coming up for me? Big fat bike race here in the Black Hills this weekend. Off to Indiana in a couple of weeks to pick up the new van. And then starting in April 8th, I think, is Flying Ghost Racing, Champ Car Racing, and that's really going to be a bunch of travel for me. Really looking forward to it. So might be a few less episodes just because I don't know how much time I'm going to have, but got some cool things planned for the next little while, so You'll be able to hear my dulcet tones with some different people. So, that's enough of this. Let's hear what Eric's got to say. So remember, slow is fast. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with people, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks everybody that watched and commented at C2C. So, yeah, that's it. Peace out. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
Oh, I heard something.
Can you hear me?
Nah, yay!
Hi, Randy.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for your patience. I'm good. How are you?
Well, it's fine because I literally, anytime I'm sitting at the computer, I got stuff to do on there, whether it's moving files or working on video or so. So we were busy.
Right. Good.
Stevie's here and she doesn't care. She's healing. She lost a toe.
Oh no.
Yeah. So it's healing, but she's enjoying the attention.
How did that happen?
We don't know. Yeah, it's not that uncommon for birds to lose. Lost that little bit of the big back toe there. So it's healing, but it's a little, she's a little not better yet, but she's getting there. So okay, so how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Being busy, starting a new project at work, and doing all the other fun stuff, recovering from C2C.
Yeah, I saw that. That looked looked like you had a good time down there.
It's always a good time, even when the Florida woman shows up, and I'm not sure exactly what she was doing, but something about you want to see pictures of the gator tails like cut off or something. And I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, there's always some interesting people in Florida, that's for sure.
Very much so. There is. But, so yeah, other than that, yeah, starting another little remodel project, getting ready for a bunch of travel for doing pictures and stuff. So ready for spring. How about you?
Nice. Yeah. I was thinking the same. The daffodils and crocuses are starting to poke through, and had a couple warm days here. I'm in New Jersey, a couple warm days in a row here, and been a little damp, but yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Daylight savings time is changing, and it's just starting to warm up, and it's very promising. I love this time of year. So
yeah.
Excited.
Yeah, daylight savings, the switch is one of my favorite days. So I suppose we should start, like, who are you?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm Eric Caravella, an adventure racer turned pack rafter, I guess you could say. And I was with New York Adventure Racing Association for a long time, both racing for them and race directing for them. And kind of as COVID happened and I was racing less and looking for something new to do, I sort of made a transition into pursuing some of my own adventures more seriously. And that turned out to involve pack rafting. And so I got into that pretty seriously, and it just evolved into starting a business. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of what brought me here. And I was promised we would talk about pack rafting, so I hope that's still true.
That's still true, unless we find something better to talk to you. You know, somebody will mention something that, and like, oh, really? Let's talk about that. But we'll definitely talk about pack rafting. So I was trying to figure out where we were, where our history started. Was it Primal Quest Badlands?
No, I don't go back to as far as Primal Quest. It was probably the NARS Championship in North Dakota, okay, where we first met. It was NARS Championship, and that was Andy Magnus's race back in, I don't know what it was, 2015 maybe, when I was racing with Olaf and Whitney and Mikkel Mattsson.
Okay, yep, that's the one. There are some really cool pictures of you guys, I remember.
Yeah, you took some awesome photos from that race. That was one of my favorite races, still is one of my favorite races. And I don't know what it was about those photos you took, but it showed how gritty and kind of dirty and, you know, that race was, and how run down we were afterwards. But yeah, we worked really hard and raced against Journey and a couple of really, really talented teams, especially Journey. They gave us a real run for our money at that race, and we eked it out, but not by much.
Yeah. So, yeah, I remember biking up after the end of the paddling section, that was, for a state that's really flat like North Dakota, that's maybe as miserable as I've seen a lot of adventure racers coming up out of that. You know, walking, you guys walking and pulling, towing each other. So,
well, yeah, I vividly remember that climb, because we started after the dark zone on that paddle, and it was freezing that morning, and we had all our thermals on. I had like thermal tights and, you know, merino wool and everything. And we got out of the water and started biking up that hill, and it was immediately 100 degrees, and we were all just dying. And we didn't want to stop because Journey was right on our tail. So we didn't want to like stop and change. So we just pushed through, and boy, I don't know how we made it, but you know, it was close to the finish, big hill climb, and then some pavement, pounding the pavement to get to the finish line. So we figured, well, we'll just suck it up and get through it. But yeah, that was a rough one for sure. I remember you took some photos from that climb where, you know, the racers are like looking super tiny down on the road coming up away from the water. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's one of those, that spot right there literally is one of the places that, you know, I think about sometimes, you know. And tell me if this happens with you, that you'll just be doing something, daydreaming, whatever, and all of a sudden, are you going to talk a little? You might have to go away. A vision of a race or of a spot that you're in a race actually just comes in your head, and it's almost like you're there again.
Yeah, I've had that, both good and bad. You know, I transported back to, you know, good spots in the race and really rewarding portions and, you know, just epic sections with beautiful views and super satisfying finish lines. And every once in a while, I'm unlucky enough to get transported back to one of the type three fun sections of a race where I'd hope never to relive it again, but somehow it just doesn't leave me.
Yeah, well, that's cool. So where did, what's your background? Where did you start? How did you get into adventure racing, which then leads us into pack rafting? Don't worry, we're going to get there.
Yeah, no, it's all tied together, so it makes sense. I mean, I grew up camping, doing outdoor stuff with my family, going up to camp in the Adirondacks every year, mountain bike racing as a teenager. And then I did my first 24-hour race, I guess, when I was in high school. And that was a mountain bike race, 24-hour relay race in New Jersey. Funny enough, actually, Dan Brennan was the race director for that, who I'm now good friends with through adventure racing years later, just sort of serendipitously. But, I went to college and didn't really do much active through college, got out, had kind of been developing some unhealthy habits in college, but my sister had started running these warrior dashes. So she bullied me into joining her for one. And man, I couldn't even run a mile without having to stop and walk at that point. I was in terrible shape, but, gave me something to train for. So I worked at it and got, up to the point where I could run a 5K and went out with a whole bunch of my friends. We all dressed up in ridiculous costumes and ran this, 5K warrior dash mud run and had a blast. And from there, it was just sort of, well, how many more of these can I do? How long can I go? I started doing the longer ones, Spartan Race and Tough Mudder. And I started doing them by myself to push myself to see how fast I could do them. And I eventually got kind of bored and decided to sort of see what's next. And like so many of my contemporaries, Eco Challenge popped into my head. And, the original Eco Challenge I'm talking about back in the 90s and early 2000s. And I said, I wonder if there's a way to do that, in a beginner level. So I looked it up and found a 6-hour race. It was a goals race. And people on the East Coast probably know goals down in, it was down in Delaware, I think. And I showed up by myself. I didn't know anybody that was racing. I had just bought a bunch of books from, Ian Adamson and all these guys who wrote books about adventure racing. I bought them on Amazon and read these books. I went out and took an REI navigation clinic, bought these navigation books and thought I was a hotshot navigator. And I went out to this 6-hour race and I'll never forget. My wife went and she was still my girlfriend at the time, but she wanted to make sure I didn't kill myself. So she showed up and kind of supervised me. She was in a little transition area there cheering me on. And man, I made so many mistakes at that race. It was ridiculous. I mean, how I managed to finish and did relatively well, I'll never know. But I was hooked and I saw a lot of other people, learned a lot from what they were doing. And I started developing my strategy and picking up little pieces of gear that I thought were helpful. And, long story short, by the end of the year, I had met Olaf and Whitney at a 10-hour race in New Jersey that they had hosted, started racing with them, went to nationals with them my first year, and then was picked up by NYRA for the following year. So that was in 2013 when I started. In 2014, I was my first year racing for NYRA. And that's the New York Adventure Racing Association, for those of you that don't know. But I was helping Olaf and Whitney by that following spring, co-race direct for the Jersey Inferno in 2014. I was pretty stoked to be on the team and to be racing with them. They were super experienced, super fast, and I was learning a lot. I mean, the learning curve with this sport is just unreal. But it was really fun, really challenging. And I'll never forget that spring. And I guess it was June in 2014 when there was the Untamed New England. Grant Killian hosted the 4-day Untamed New England there. And the team was supposed to be, you're wearing the shirt. The team was supposed to be Olaf, Whitney, and this guy Bruce and this guy Chris. But Chris got hurt. And with 2 weeks before this 4-day race, they invited me to be on the team. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. It was super intimidating. I hemmed and hawed about it a lot. I just really couldn't decide. And it was actually my wife who said, you're never going to forgive yourself if you don't do this race. Mm-hmm. So I said, all right, sign up and just see what happens. And it was, it was an amazing experience, super challenging. I ended up loving that at an expedition length, probably the most out of any length racing, and I've done a bunch of them since. But I was lucky at the time. I was in super good shape from, you know, vetting the Jersey Inferno course. So I was fit, but I just didn't have the experience. And again, I made a ton of mistakes because, you know, you can be an adventure racer doing, you know, 12 to 24 hour races, but there's a lot, you know, still to learn to make the transition to multi-day racing. And I learned a lot at that first one, but that was cool race, cool experience. And then that was where I first was introduced to pack rafting, because Grant Killian famously includes pack rafting in a lot of his races early on, kind of before pack rafting was really a thing. Of course, fast forward to today, and I can probably rattle off 5 or 6 races just this spring that have pack rafting now. But I really loved it, and, you know, kind of got hooked and started doing it. And I was racing really seriously still for a lot of years, until I sort of switched over to pack rafting more seriously in the last several years. So I guess that's my genesis.
Yep. So actually, so we go back to Untamed.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if you were there. I know Victor Buccolo, I think, was there, and I wasn't sure if you were at that one as well. But yeah, I guess you were. I don't remember if we had much interaction there, but were at that 4-day in 2014.
Yeah, because that was you did the Dead River.
Yeah,
that was the one where I got so amazed because had great water and some of them had no water, because I didn't realize that the dams just regulated their flow for power.
And yeah, there's a,
you know, I'm out west, which we have hydroelectric, but they don't have water. So a new thing that I learned. So it's like tides. I was always every time I'm in the ocean, I look back and shit's floating around because the tide's coming in. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, it's different on the East Coast. We do have a lot of dam release rivers, and we rely on that a lot because we don't have the same seasonal flows from snowpack or glaciers as they do out west or up in Alaska, but we make it work. But actually we ran into each other, I think, at you were at Cowboy Tough in 2015 too. I think that was That was the next multi-day race I did out in Wyoming. That involved pack rafting right at the end, a little bit of pack rafting right at the end too.
Yeah.
But after that Untamed race, I just started borrowing, and Chris Rice will tell you, I just basically never gave his raft pass back to him. I just was borrowing rafts and playing around with them. And I just loved how they opened up a lot of possibilities and created a, you know, option for really, you know, interesting and creative route designs and multi-sport adventures and things like that. So I was really into it, just as kind of an adventure tool. I didn't really get into whitewater pack rafting until more recently. And that was, that's mostly just so that I can, whitewater rafting is fun, and I do it for fun. But it was the reason I started training in whitewater was to go be able to go up to Alaska and some of these sort of farther reaches in the, and use them for backcountry adventures there and be able to do so safely.
Yeah. So you're, you know, learning the safety so you can, go back in the middle of nowhere. So where you want to know what you're doing.
Yeah. And so that kind of, I don't know, a lot of your listeners might know about the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic, but if they don't, it's a pretty, pretty cool underground sort of unofficial, I'll call it a race, but it's not really a race. And it's happened in Alaska every year since 1982, I think. And in that very first edition in 1982, this legendary adventurer, Dick Griffith busted out a inflatable boat to cross this glacial river that everybody else had planned to swim. And he kind of revolutionized backcountry travel at that time. And Roman Dial was there at the time. And Roman Dial has pushed the boundaries of backcountry exploration using various modes of travel, including pack rafting. But that Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic really attracted me. As an adventure racer, because I felt like that was in, kind of the next level of adventure racing. And what it is basically, volunteer organizer every year just picks a start point and an end point and picks a week and says, here's the start, here's the end, you have a week, and it's a mass start, but just whoever wants to show up, there's no entry fee, there's no registration really, there's no award ceremony, nothing. Some people treat it as a race, some people treat it as kind of a backpacking trip, but it's always very challenging. It's always, through trailless wilderness, and you're not allowed to use roads, you're not allowed to use, anything but human power means of transportation, much like an adventure race, but there's no checkpoints. It's just a start and a finish. And so huge, huge route choice. And it's anywhere generally from 120 miles to 350 miles or whatever. And so I was like obsessed with the idea of going up and doing that. And then I started emailing kind of my adventure heroes up there, wrote the Roman Dials and the Luke Mills. And I said, hey, I'm from New Jersey and I want to do the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic. What do you think? And they're like, I think you need to train. To their credit, they wanted to make sure these outsiders coming in really respected the Alaskan wilderness, because it's a bit of a different ball game up there. But they were the ones that recommended I take Swiftwater Rescue Training. And I hadn't even heard of it. I didn't even know what that was. So I said, okay, well, if these guys are saying it, that probably is a good idea. So I went and started taking Swiftwater Rescue Training classes. And I flew out to Idaho for one, a Packraft specific one. I took a bunch here on the East Coast. I started whitewater paddling training with, professionals. Of course, there were kayakers here on the East Coast. There isn't any Packraft instruction until now. Yeah. And I started prepping really, really seriously for this Alaska event. But the one I had targeted was in 2020. So you could probably guess what happened to that.
Yeah, of course.
And it didn't end up happening. But what happened in the process was, as I learned more about river safety and kind of learned how much I didn't know that I didn't know about river safety and rescue techniques. And, a lot of these races, adventure races, we had been carrying, throw bags and this river safety gear. I didn't know what to do with it, and no one ever trained me. And turns out there's a lot you can do with these river safety equipment and even minimalist river safety equipment from a pack raptor standpoint. I loved it. I mean, the river safety training, I really got hooked on it. I just took class after class with different instructors, and it really kind of opened my eyes to a lot of the sketchy stuff that was happening on the river and a lot with pack rafters, because pack rafters typically don't have a strong boating background or river safety background. They come from the adventure racing world. They come from a backpacking world. They want to use the boat to extend their trips, but they don't really take the time to get the river training that, a kayaker might get, because the barriers to entry for a pack rafter and a kayaker are much different. Pack rafts are so forgiving. You could just hop in and float down, some class two or class three river without really needing any training, supposedly. Whereas in a whitewater kayak, it's a very self-correcting, like you need to know what you're doing. They're very tippy. So most people don't just jump in a whitewater kayak and cruise down a class three river. They get training. But that's not so with pack rafters, although that's starting to change. And the American Pack Rafting Association is starting to collect data about that. And I can talk about the APA and my work with them and the ACA as well later if you want. But
yeah,
I saw a need, because there wasn't any pack raft instruction, pack raft specific instruction on the East Coast. I had the benefit of being plugged into the adventure racing community. And a lot of the pack rafters on the East Coast are also adventure racers. And I figured, why not take it upon myself to give these people an opportunity to get the river safety training they need, to get the pack raft specific paddling training, gear training. And, I had spent hundreds of days in the backcountry doing my own adventures. I've been up to Alaska, out west in Wyoming and Utah and all up and down the East Coast. kind of gaining experience, and it's been really valuable. A lot like adventure racing. I mean, the most successful adventure racers are often the most experienced ones. And I've learned a ton just through my own experience. So I figured, why not pass that along and try to make the pack rafting community a little safer in the meantime?
Yeah. So basically you're trying to make sure that, adventure racers get done with the race and they don't look at their pack raft till they get it out of the bag at the next race.
Yes. I mean, and actually it's funny you bring that up, because for years I had, as an adventure racer, I thought I was going to get a pack raft, and I figured it would just be one of these tandem racing boats. But I just couldn't bring myself to pull the trigger just because of the expense involved. Until Rootstock ended up putting on a race where they offered a discount to participants. And I said, you know, maybe now's the time, and maybe I could look at this a little differently. And instead of just buying a race boat, which I'd only be using in a race or only when someone else can go and paddle with me, maybe I get a solo boat, understand that it's going to be a little bit slower in a race, but I'll get a whole lot of use out of it outside of the racing environment, be able to justify the expense a little bit more. Unfortunately, I had spent years just annoying the hell out of my wife with, should I buy a pack raft or shouldn't I? And she's just like, oh my God, just buy one already. So she's been great. And then, you know, what's funny about that too is, like, once you buy the pack raft, it's like, oh, well, you realize all these other things you need to buy, you know, like a dry suit, that's another $1,000. But that's easy to justify. It's like, oh, well, it's safety gear. I mean, I need to be safe, don't I? So I also need this, and I need, you know, whatever. So, it's really been my mission, and I've done a lot of outreach and try to get, you know, people going out on group trips and all this stuff and use their boats in between races and get some training. And, even throughout my years of adventure racing, again, it's just, there was a lot I didn't know. And I look at a lot of things that are going on still in a lot of adventure races, and it worries me about the lack of information that both racers and race directors have. And, you know, in some cases, a lack of appreciation for how hazardous the river environment can be. So actually I ended up on the United States Adventure Racing Association Safety Committee, which I'm on now with a bunch of other really amazing individuals, and we volunteer our time to just sort of talk about safety issues as they relate to adventure races and safety requirements for race directors to sanction with the USARA. And Brent Friedland invited me to that because of how much time I had spent haranguing him about the need for river safety training for adventure racers. So it all worked out. And, you know, I'm pretty happy with how things are going and the enthusiastic response I've received from the community on the East Coast. I mean, I'm selling out my courses and people want to take rescue training, and it's been really good. So I've been really pleased by that.
Yeah. So when you started and made the decision you wanted to learn and be safe, were there any pack raft courses, or did you have to, like, take kayak courses and figure out the difference between a kayak and pack raft and mold it to what you needed?
So I went, the first river safety and rescue course I took, I flew out to Idaho to take a pack raft specific course with a company called Swiftwater Safety Institute. I thought that was a valuable experience. I didn't quite get the in-depth rescue training that I was looking for from that course. So I ended up coming back to New Jersey and seeking out some ACA, American Canoe Association certified instructors, because the American Canoeing Association certifies and insures instructors in a lot of different paddling disciplines and also river safety and rescue. And so I started taking courses with them, but like you said, they're kayakers. So it was an interesting dynamic kind of training with these guys, as they were really interested to sort of figure out the unique rescue considerations related to pack rafting. I don't mind learning, like, kayak specific rescue stuff, you know, unpinning boats and things. You know, maybe that'll end up being needed or valuable for me if I'm ever paddling on a river and a kayaker needs help. So that's not bad. It's just there was a lot that I realized I could do better, or at least I could sort of tailor it more towards the needs of a pack rafter, both from a, you know, the boat perspective and from the type of gear we're likely to be using, or not have. You know, like, you're not going to be relying on the same type of gear on a pack rafting trip that you might have on a 30-day Grand Canyon trip in big ore rigs. You know, you just can't carry that kind of stuff. And, you know, and even just other things like boat-based rescue considerations, self-rescue, wet exits and entries, pinning considerations. A lot of this stuff is very different from kayaking. And I said, you know, I can figure this out and create sort of a customized curriculum within the ACA framework for pack rafting. So I did go and become a certified ACA river safety and rescue instructor with a couple of kayakers. But along the way, I got involved with these guys, and one of the certifying instructors in my river safety course was happened to be the president of the American Canoeing Association. He was super stoked to help me pitch the ACA on including pack rafting in their list of disciplines, because up until that point, pack rafting was not recognized by the ACA as a paddling discipline. And it was very unclear. I spent a lot of time talking to a lot of people, and it was very unclear how the pack raft fit into the ACA's existing framework, or whether or not I could become certified as an ACA instructor if I took a certification course in a pack raft, because there were requirements of kayak instructors that I would not have been able to fulfill simply by virtue of being in a pack raft. And I won't go into the specifics, but it was an 8 or 10 month process of politicking and getting people involved and working with the American Pack Rafting Association, the pack raft community at large, all across the country, and even internationally, to sort of dial in a standardized curriculum of instruction to pitch to the Safety and Education Instruction Council with the ACA. And that happened last October. I met with the board, the SEIC board, and pitched them on pack rafting. And they voted unanimously to adopt it as their newest discipline. So that was huge news for us in the pack rafting community last year, which basically meant the ACA now agreed to include pack rafting as its offered disciplines and ensure pack rafters to teach a pack raft specific curriculum that I helped to develop. And I ended up on the discipline committee. I'm currently the vice chair of the discipline committee, and we're working on instructor rollout and things like that right now. So this year will be the first year in history that you'll start to see the ACA offering pack rafting courses. And so that was a huge win for me and for the pack rafting community as a whole. And I'm kind of going off on a tangent. I don't know if this is of interest to you, but
no, it is.
But in the process, I also became involved with the American Pack Rafting Association, of course. So now I'm the Northeast Region Representative for the American Pack Rafting Association. So I'm doing outreach for them and, you know, fielding emails and trying to sort of consolidate the community, especially here in the Northeast. And so that was sort of all happening at the same time as I was starting my company, which is called Pack Rafting Adventures. I don't know if I even mentioned that yet, but Pack Rafting Adventures is my company. And I decided to offer pack raft specific paddling and skills instruction, as well as river safety and rescue instruction, guided trips, adventure races, and rentals as well. So I have rental gear too. It has been awesome. I mean, it's been super fun to get to know a lot of the people involved. And I went up to Alaska last year and I spent a bunch of days training with Luke Mell. And that was kind of another pack raft specific course of instruction I was able to take from one of the leading experts. I mean, he wrote the book on the topic. So talk about your leading experts in the field. But I spent a lot of time with him learning and sort of just building my own experience before going out on my own kind of Alaska wilderness trip, which I did afterwards. And so I'm trying to bring all that back to the East Coast and that sort of wealth of knowledge that I've picked up over the years and spread it around as best I can.
Yeah. Is the Northeast up there in the East Coast? It seems to be kind of a hotbed. It's really good. As opposed, you know, like out west, you got the Colorado. That doesn't seem like a good pack rafting river to me.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on where on the Colorado you are.
Well, that's true. But it seems like you guys have a lot of choices.
We do. But like you said, I mean, the East, we have a lot of choices. I mean, there are a lot of rivers in the East. But the East, the rivers in the East kind of present their own unique challenges from a trip planning perspective, which I happen to like. I just absolutely love the logistics and planning process of creating trips and, you know, making unique link ups and things like that. Doesn't always work out. You know, it's not always a home run because we're very rain dependent often, or dam release dependent. Levels are questionable, sometimes hard to predict. I could go on for hours talking about how I plan trips, but point is, lots of options, but it's tricky. You know, it's tricky to know where to go, how to do it, how to link it up. And I've been learning a lot in my years, and recently over the past couple of years, actually, I've been spending a fair amount of time as best I can down in the Southern Appalachians. I was just down in Asheville a couple of weeks ago, Asheville, North Carolina, not Nashville, Tennessee, but Asheville, North Carolina, a lot of people know is just like paddling Mecca. The river country down there is awesome. You know, Nantahala and the Smokies and Pisgah and all these big mountain wildernesses down there that maybe people don't appreciate, but are real legitimate. Like that's legitimate mountain terrain and the rivers are just spectacular. And I've been really enjoying exploring down there and poking around, picking people's brains. And I've done some really cool paddles like on the Chattooga. I was in the Smokies. We did this really rad hike in and paddle out on this remote creek in the Smoky Mountains. That was pretty cool. And, you know, I don't know, Nolichucky, like Eastern Tennessee is awesome. The Nolichucky River Gorge is one of the most beautiful stretches of river I've ever seen. It's just really, really wild, you know, and the different types of rivers and different types of terrain you find throughout the East Coast is just really neat. But yeah, that's a long way of agreeing with you that we do have a lot of options.
For most of your trips, do you do a, you know, shuttle, put in, paddle, shuttle out, or do you hike in, or do you, you know, hike in, paddle some, hike out, you know, what's it, is there probably not a standard, but what do you like to do?
Yeah, I do a mix of everything. I mean, I do tend to do a lot of kind of roadside car shuttle trips, both because paddling whitewater is fun, but it's also an opportunity to keep training and keep my skills kind of dialed. Yeah. Those roadside whitewater trips are not my preferred type of pack raft adventure. I have friends of mine who do prefer that. So to appease them, or at least get them to agree to my type of preferred adventure, I go on their preferred adventures every so often. But yeah, so I do the roadside runs, and honestly, pack rafts are great for that too, because you could throw them in a trunk. You could throw them in a trunk of a car. You could get four people and all their paddling equipment in a Toyota Camry, and I've done it with pack rafts. That's great. You don't need the roof racks. You don't need the pickup trucks or whatever. I've done, you know, shuttle trips where I do kind of like a point to point traverse that involves hiking and paddling. I do like to try to figure out loops, and I don't know, interestingly, or at least to me, it's interesting. A lot of my routes end up taking the form of a figure eight just because of how the rivers tend to flow sort of in the same direction. I will paddle one way and then hike back up and into a diagonal and paddle the other way and then hike back the opposite way in a diagonal, creating kind of a figure eight. And I've done that out in the Canyonlands. I've done that up in the Adirondacks. So it's that's sort of by, you know, and it hasn't been on purpose. It's just sort of the form that some of my routes take. And then, you know, I do loop routes too. They're not always rivers. I paddle a fair amount of white water, of flat water. I'm pretty equal opportunity with respect to how I use the pack rafts, and my sort of style is just like a landscape crossing kind of, I use them to just sort of traverse, the landscape just in a bit of a different way or in a little bit more of a creative way. And I kind of like being able to mix up walking and paddling, and you can cover an amazing amount of distance that way, just because you can hike for, you know, 8 hours until your feet are thrashed, and then you sit down in your boat and you're totally fresh again. You can go for another 8 hours.
Yeah.
So I found on a majority of my trips, I end up covering my planned distance way faster than I thought I was going to, just because of how, you know, it's hard to explain, because your pack is so heavy all the time. You pick it up and you're like, how the heck am I going to cover this distance? But it just works out that way. So it's cool. I'll end up planning a 2-day trip and just finish it in a day, or planning a 4-day trip and finishing it in 3 days or whatever. So it's kind of neat, you know, and I haven't lost that adventure racing tendency to really kind of push myself. Not everybody's like that. I suspect a lot of your listeners are like that. Yeah. So they might identify. But yeah, it's a mix, and I don't, you know, I would say, you know, those landscape traverses are my preferred, but I like to get out and paddle, even if it's roadside or whatever it is. If it's fun, if I'm out on a nice day on a cool river or with good people, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I don't get that, because I'm not a water person, but my wife, Paulette, yeah, she's like, any day on the water is a good day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, and part of it is because I have a lot of history up in the Adirondacks, and I went to camp there every year as a kid, and there's a very deep paddling history in the Adirondacks, and of course a very deep hiking history in the Adirondacks. And, you know, canoeing is pretty popular. They use these pack boats too, which are kind of a cross between a canoe and a kayak, but yeah, it's, you know, it's pond hopping or river to pond or whatever, where you're portaging your canoe and all your gear and all this and that. And there's some really classic canoeing routes up there. And there's some really, really awesome whitewater up there too. But I have immensely enjoyed picking new routes and new link ups and new creative ways of combining certain existing routes or adding rivers to existing routes that no canoeist or kayak or whatever go to, because it's just too much of a pain in the butt to hike in there. And then talking to the canoeists about what I'm doing, and their mind is totally blown. They're like, you did what in how many days? And it's just really, really neat to be able to cover that kind of distance and do these weird directional link ups. And just see the wilderness from a little bit of a different perspective, rather than just kind of walking through the green tunnel all the time.
Yeah, I get that. What's the one river or one spot that you paddled and you thought it'd be okay, but when you actually did it, it was like blew your mind?
I think the Hudson Gorge in the Adirondacks is pretty hard to beat for me, just because it's because of how special that whole area is to me, and there's just a lot of history, and it goes kind of runs really deep for me. The Hudson, if you don't know, starts on the flanks of Mount Marcy, which is the highest point in New York State, and it trickles down into this little tiny tarn called Lake Tear of the Clouds, and then from there it's just sort of comes through the high peaks and winds its way through the Adirondacks before it leaves in sort of the southeastern Adirondacks, and obviously gains volume and gains volume and gains volume. And everybody knows what the Hudson looks like down near New York City. But there's a section through this area called the Hudson Gorge Wilderness that they actually do dam releases during the year, which is fun because you can catch it when the natural release or the natural levels aren't conducive. But it's just really, really fun. It's challenging without being too scary. And it's just a really special remote feeling. It's away from all the roads and, you know, just a really beautiful wilderness. And it's very, very, very special to me.
Yeah. Sounds pretty cool. Yeah. To me, you say Hudson River and I have this, you know, vision of this big, huge river, but it's got to start someplace, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if any of your listeners are interested, I mean, I have some really cool photos. I actually had, before I started my website, I hired a professional photographer to follow me and a buddy down the Hudson Gorge so that I can get some like professional level photos for my website and for my social media. And I have a few on my website. I have a few on my Instagram account. And you sort of get the picture of how pretty it is in there. And it's, you know, legit white water, class 3-4 white water, and really, really fun. They run commercial raft trips down there. I'm friends with a bunch of the raft guides. So I'll go down sometimes, you know, with raft support, which is great for safety. But it ends up just being a fun day where you just float through. And if the weather's nice, we did, oh man, I caught the last release of the season last year in October. I think it was on Columbus Day. And the leaves were changing. It was just, I mean, what a beautiful bluebird day. I mean, it doesn't really get more magical than that. It was such an awesome experience.
That was very cool. So I'm an adventure racer. I'm going to go do a race. Got a pretty good pack rafting section. Which one of your courses should they take?
Yeah, good question. So actually I paired up with a couple of the race directors who are offering adventure races this year and even created discount codes for the participants of those races so that they could come and take my course. And I created, and I'm still trying to figure out like what people want from a pack raft instructional standpoint, but I figured for the level of pack rafting that's involved in most races, at least here on the East Coast, maybe not Expedition Oregon, but on the East Coast, I think a lot of people could benefit just kind of from one of my combination courses where I do half safety content and half paddling skills and gear content, where it's just sort of a mashup of everything, where it's almost like a 101 course. Where they come in, and I created those actually specifically with the adventure racers in mind, because I knew a lot of them, you know, weren't going to have time to squeeze in 2 days before these races happened, kind of early spring or early summer. And if they did have the time, you know, it's still cold here through April and even into May. And it's like, you don't really want to be doing rescue training unless you have a dry suit. Not everybody has a dry suit. Of course, I bought some dry suits to use as rentals to try to enable people to take those early season trainings. But yeah, I think just doing a paddling skills course, I'll still review some of the basic safety stuff, like, you know, what to do with a throw rope, you know, what happens if you fall out of your boat, how to swim a rapid, you know, the basics that you'd need to know to avoid some of the common mistakes I see people making. Yeah. But those combo courses where I do really like it, then they're full day, you know, where I do a whole half day just based on safety and rescue, and then a whole half day on, you know, mostly class 2 paddling. I have one course coming up in a couple of weeks that involves class 3 paddling. That was geared more towards the people going out to Expedition Oregon. But most people, honestly, even more advanced paddlers or experienced paddlers can get a lot out of instruction in class 2 whitewater. And one of my mentors told me long ago, and it really stuck with me, that, you know, you should really learn how to paddle class 2 whitewater like a class 3 boater. And you can dial in those skills and really, really push yourself and challenge yourself to run difficult, challenging drills. and advance your skills in class two to the point where like you can run all this stuff backwards and it, you know, upside down or whatever, it doesn't really matter. And that's where you want to be kind of before you level up into the class three. And then once you do, you've got all those basics and everything translates, you know, you have all those basic skills in mind. So I think a majority of my instruction is really going to center on class two whitewater. I'll throw in a class three day here and there and maybe guided trips on class three, but I don't really plan to do much instruction in class three, at least not right now. I don't really see a need for it because of how valuable good instruction in class two can be.
So other than adventure racers, who are you finding that's getting into pack rafting? Is it other boaters from other, you know, other kayakers, canoers or hikers, or who's coming to pack rafting?
Yeah, that's a good question. I am starting to see kayakers who are kind of adventure motivated, raising their eyebrows a little bit at the pack rafts, especially when we're out running class four rivers with kayakers. And they're like, man, they had no idea what the pack rafts can do these days. You know, they, for years, they just were like, oh, those guys are just in the pool toys. You know, nobody really took them seriously, but the technology at this point, especially with Alpaca, who's a supporter of my company and I really believe in them. Their technology and their R&D has gone, I mean, taking the boat design to a whole nother level. And I'll tell you, I mean, my boat has not limited me in what I'm able to pursue. It's like my skill level still has not caught up to what my boat can do. So, and I think people are starting to realize that. I think these serious whitewater paddlers are starting to realize that. And they hear us talk about these hiking trips to these remote creeks, like in the Smokies. We were just talking to these guys down in Asheville, and they're like, dang, I've always had my eye on that, but I never wanted to carry my kayak up there. And we're like, well, you know, this is a good solution.
Yeah.
And so they're starting to realize that. But otherwise, it's the backpackers and the outdoor adventurers who realize they can throw a boat in their bag and extend their backpacking trip and include some paddling. Guy, you know, these people who are interested going out to the Bob Marshall Wilderness or going, you know, out to Alaska. I've actually had people who live in, I have a couple of guys who live in Pennsylvania who were referred to me by friends of mine in Alaska because they were in Alaska asking about opportunities for pack rafting instruction on the East Coast, and they sent them to me. So there are people out there sort of with the idea to pursue these trips, and some of them are already doing it. And then hopefully coming to the realization that getting some training either early on in their pack rafting career or ideally before they even make the switch is a good idea. And I think a lot of that has to do with Luke Mell's book, The Pack Raft Handbook, which just came out. And a lot of people have raved about that. I think it's a really valuable book, and people are starting to understand that like pack rafts are real boats and they can put you in a really hazardous environment and get you in trouble if you don't respect you know, the river and you don't understand what you're really doing. So yeah, I think it's a mix. You know, it's obviously a lot of adventure racers, but it's also a lot of guys who are already out there doing it. It's a lot of kayakers who want to make the switch. They're probably not really going to be my clientele because they've got a lot of the training already. You know, they may need some instruction on the ins and outs of the gear, but you know, for the most part, that transition is usually pretty smooth between kayak and pack raft. Or it's backpackers who really want to throw a boat in their bag and extend their trip.
Get out there. So you're Stevie. So you're doing I have it on my other screen over here, the Eastern Mountain Wilderness Challenge. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So super excited about that. And actually, I've had this idea in mind for years. This way predates my company, Pack Rafting Adventures. So I'm pretty stoked to be able to offer this event. So it's an adventure race. Let me back up. I guess the best way I could define it is kind of like it's an ode to the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic, but still an adventure race. I mean, let's face it, we don't have the spacier on the East Coast to do something like the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic. And my background is adventure racing. I think this is kind of a combination of those two things, where it's a big point-to-point wilderness crossing like the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic, not as big as the one in Alaska, of course. But, you know, from an East Coast perspective, I was able to pick a big kind of remote wilderness that really lends itself to pack rack travel and put together a point-to-point course that I'm giving people 30 hours to do, and I'm only going to use 4 or 5 checkpoints to do it. And the idea is, you know, no transition areas. You start with the gear that you need to finish. It's just you or you and your team, you are out there. You start, you go and finish, and you cross this landscape. And this is sort of in, like I was talking about earlier, this is my style, like these landscape crossings where you use the pack raft as a tool to see another an area that you might not otherwise see. And this area is very uncommonly visited, really unique area, gorgeous wilderness, tons of moose, you know. And I was, you know, talking to the rangers about it, and their mind were kind of blown by the idea. They were stoked. So it's kind of a unique take on or across from adventure racing to the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic. And you know, it's not like it hasn't really been, well, it hasn't been done this way before this way. You know, it's like Grant has put big, huge pack raft traverses in Untamed. This is going to be a little bit different than that. But yeah, just two disciplines, hiking, pack rafting. You decide when you're hiking, you decide when you're pack rafting. And it's going to be really neat to see how people choose to cross this wilderness.
Sounds like sort of get back to your roots, kind of a fun event to me.
Yeah. And it's in the Western Adirondacks, which really makes me happy because it's an area, the whole Adirondacks really just isn't used for adventure racing. Yeah. And I just love how applicable the pack rafts are in this area and in the Adirondacks and a lot of places in the Adirondacks. I mean, just so many rivers. So it'll be really neat. And actually one thing I'm doing differently than a traditional adventure race also is kind of an on-ramp program or an opportunity for people to participate who aren't super confident in their navigational abilities. So I'm offering an opportunity for people to sign up in a non-competitive, what I'm calling a digital division. And, you know, commonly used modes of navigation these days are on the cell phone, the Gaia GPS apps of the world and the CalTopo apps. And, you know, this is what a lot of the guys up in Alaska are doing. And during the Alaska Mountain Wilderness Classic, most of them are using Gaia. And I don't, you know, I think there's still value to learning the map and compass portion of adventure racing. And what I'm hoping is that people will come, they'll be able to use their GPS to see the course and not feel too intimidated. And maybe that'll inspire them once they see, you know, what people can do with a map and compass to maybe give it a try next time or go out and do some training or try some more races. Because that navigation thing has just always been such a barrier to entry for people in adventure racing. And I don't know how popular this decision will be with the real true hardcore adventure race community. But I really am trying to do something a little bit different here.
Yeah.
And I think it just, this course, it makes just a really grand adventure, even if you don't want to go out and race. And I want to give people the opportunity to see it as much as possible. So.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Just a couple more questions here because you've been very, very helpful, very giving with your time. But how many hours a week are you looking at maps and or Google Earth?
Oh man, yeah. You should ask my wife; she'll roll her eyes at that. I have, you know, my Caltopo account is filled with just hundreds of route ideas, and I am so obsessed with maps; it's just absurd. I can't even guess. You know, I'd be willing to bet it's probably what normal people would consider an unhealthy amount.
Yeah.
But it's not more than other people I know. So that's kind of like how I justify it. It's like, at least I'm not way weirder than, you know, these other weird people. But yeah, I've just really, really got, and as a matter of fact, I mentioned the name Luke Mell a couple of times. He wrote the Packraft Handbook. He's up in Alaska. He's just really been kind of the driving force behind the growth of the sport and safety in the sport as well, and building a culture of safety and pack rafting. But his thing, and I really identify with his style. He does a lot of these big traverses and landscape trips and stuff. He's done a lot of big technical objectives as well, but he's really kind of a geek about a lot of this stuff. And he won't mind that I say that. He's a self-admitted geek. He actually worked for, in GIS mapping technology for years professionally before he left to do, you know, guiding and writing and instruction, outdoor instruction full time. So anyway, I say all that because I'm actually in the middle of a 6-week training course with him, an online training course about everything to do with remote trip planning and using all these different types of technology, whether it be Google Earth, Caltopo, these near real-time satellite imagery like MODIS and Sentinel, weather applications like Windy and all this stuff. I touched on this earlier when it comes to, like, you know, really putting the time into planning trips. I'm almost always the one in my group of friends that's doing it. You know, I plan the trip because I like it. Fortunately, I have a bunch of very trusting friends. Matter of fact, the trip I did in Alaska, this week traverse of the Talkeetna Mountains in Alaska that I did in September, I planned all of that. My two friends that went with me were almost uninvolved, and they were like, we trust you. You know, I showed them the maps. I gave them updates along the way. They're like, no problem, we'll be there. And it was one of the best adventures of our lives. It was really challenging, but very, very cool. And the time that I had spent and invested in planning the trip really paid off. And that's super, super rewarding to me. And that's been a big reason for me why I made that transition from race director. I'm always kind of looking to grow and what's the next thing, or from a racer perspective, where the race director is not really telling you where to go in a race, but, you know, it kind of is. And I didn't really want to be told where to go anymore. I wanted to be responsible for my own route, my own adventure, and the outcome, whether it's good or bad. And, you know, the time I spend planning, when it works out, it's just that much more satisfying. So I do spend a ridiculous amount of time looking at the computer and planning. And it's just funny to think, like, you know, I do this for the outdoor adventure, but I end up staring at a screen for almost as much time as I'm out there actually doing the thing. So
yep.
I don't know. It's a good thing I enjoy it.
Yep. All right. So that kind of leads us into the next question is, what's the trip you haven't told your wife about yet?
Well, oh man, there's a couple. So I try to drop little hints periodically about the ideas that I have, so that when I mention that I'm about to book my flights, it's not a total surprise. Of course, she always pretends like it's a surprise anyway. Or maybe it is, because half the time she's probably not listening to me.
Yeah.
But I've got a few on the burner right now. There's a trip I did in the Adirondacks a couple of years ago. That's probably one of my favorites still. And I'd like to try to do it a little earlier season to try to get some more snow melt, get the rivers a little bit higher. And now that I'm a better boater, I'd like to run some of the stuff that I walked around the first time. So that's one. I actually would like to start guiding that route eventually as well. It's a really, really, I mean, it's awesome, but it's very challenging, and I need to vet that route at least once or twice more before I take people on it. There's a route up in Maine that I want to do in Baxter State Park that I don't think has ever been done before. This June, I was supposed to go up to Alaska to do a 10-day traverse of the Brooks Range in Arctic Alaska. And I was about ready to buy my plane tickets for that when I found out my friends were going to get married in Kauai at that very same time. So bummer, I got to go to Kauai, right? Fortunately, there's a river in Kauai I want to pack raft too, so I'm going to bring my boat. I'm not sure if my wife knows that yet. That might qualify.
Yeah, okay.
And then I've been thinking for years about how cool it would be to cross Nepal with a pack raft. And I don't know if anybody's done that before, because the neat thing about Nepal is it starts up on the Tibetan Plateau, you know, super, super high. And then it runs down through, you know, all these different types of ecosystems all the way down to, you know, the border of India, where it's basically at sea level or just above it. Yeah. So over the course of, you know, several hundred miles, you can link up these cool rivers and hike past Annapurna and paddle and hike and paddle and end up going through all these different microclimates and get from the arid Tibetan plateau down to the jungles where there's like rhinos and tigers running around and stuff. I mean, that seems so wild to me. But that's a real challenge from like a planning perspective, because it's like totally foreign environment to me. And, it was interesting because I had what I thought looked like a really viable route to do it until I measured. I had this big, long river descent kind of in the first few days of the trip, and it looked good on the satellite imagery, looked really fun, like fun, really consistent class three, till I measured the river gradient and learned it was like 3 times steeper than I thought it was. So I was like, oh, that sounds super scary. Maybe I need to go back to the drawing board on this one. So it's fun. I mean, just looking at imagery and like imagining this stuff, it's like, it's almost how I travel. And a lot of adventure racers will identify with this. You know, my wife doesn't really get it. And a lot of my friends don't really get it. But like when I look at a map, you know, I'm imagining like what it's like to be in that environment and what it would be like to travel through that environment. It's almost like, you know, mental or imaginative travel for me. And that's just amplified when you can do these amazing fly throughs on Google Earth. I mean, the imagery that's offered through Google Earth and Esri World imagery and stuff is just so outrageous these days. It's like, it's unreal. And it's just so cool to be able to explore areas that way without even leaving your couch. It's just, it's super addicting.
Yeah, it is. Okay, final question, and this is a New Jersey specific question. So in The Sopranos, did the Russian make it out of the Pine Barrens?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think there's a lot of people that aren't making it out of the Pine Barrens. That's actually good pack rafting down there, though, so I might go and check it out. I'll see if I can get an answer for you.
Go see if you can find them. So, cool. Well, so we'll put a link to the website and stuff in the notes so people can find it. And
cool. I appreciate that. Yeah. You know, like I said, we got a lot coming up this year. Me, you know, the Royal We, me and my buddies in the pack craft, kind of my tight pack crafting circle here. And one thing I will mention that I didn't yet was this event in July that we're doing on the Lehigh River in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. And the Lehigh, for anybody that doesn't know, is really kind of an eastern staple for whitewater. There's a few different sections. They do recreational dam releases every year, and a lot of people cut their teeth on this particular whitewater river. And it's just really fun, really approachable. They do a lot of like mellow commercial trips. It's the first river I ever paddled whitewater when I was a kid. And so out of this campground, a part of my function for the American Pack Rafting Association, being the Northeast region rep, is the outreach efforts that I'm making. And this is one of those. So reserved a big group site campground at the campground there in Jim Thorpe, where people can go and sign up for camping. I'm running instructional courses alongside this. I'm calling it the Northeast Region Pack Raft Roundup. And everybody who wants to come out and just meet other pack rafters and just, sort of hang out for the weekend, camp, go arrange, you know, their trips and pals, take a class if they want to. They don't have to. That's totally independent of the pack raft roundup, optional, but, you know, there for anybody who wants to do it. And just go paddle the river. It should be a really, really fun time to get a big group together. And so people can meet each other and maybe have trip partners and paddling partners for the future. I know when I went out to Idaho to take this packraft specific swiftwater rescue course that I took, I still stay in touch with people that I met at that course. I did a Canyonlands trip with one of them. One of the guys I met there and his wife came up to Alaska and did the Loop Mel training with me and then came with me on that week-long trip through the Talkeetnas. So it's really neat. I mean, for whatever reason, and maybe it's similar to why this is true for adventure racers, but I find that pack rafters really kind of link up and have are very compatible. And because it's still a fledgling sport on the East Coast, I want to just try to get people introduced to each other as best I can, create a sense of community and nurture that, and give people an opportunity both to meet other paddlers and to take safety training and, you know, basically spread the love. So I'll give you the link for that too. I hope you put that in the show notes because, you know, registration for the roundup that goes to the American Pack Rafting Association, Northeast region. I'm doing this on a volunteer basis. That's all invested into this roundup and into future pack rafting outreach efforts in the Northeast. But hey, if you decide to sign up for one of my courses, I'm running a swiftwater safety course on Saturday and a class 2 paddling course on Sunday. So it should be a really cool event. I'm really stoked for that too.
Sounds like a full schedule you have.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's nuts because, you know, I had all these grand plans for doing my own pack rafting trips and, they keep getting bumped because of unfortunately, quote unquote, the enthusiasm I've been experiencing from people who are like really into this, is starting to take up a lot of my time, but you know, it's really a good thing. I'm actually, like I said, I'm super happy, with the response I've gotten, and not just for the success of my business, but also just because I want people to be safer. I want people to be out there, meeting up with other people and having fun. And I want the sport to grow. I mean, bottom line, I think it's a cool activity, and I want more people to know about it.
Perfect, a good way to end this conversation. So, it took us a while to get here, but it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, thanks, Randy, and sorry I had some technical difficulties that delayed the start of our conversation. But yeah. Here I am, and I appreciate your time and you having me. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. So. All right. Awkward Zoom. Bye.
All right. Bye.
She'd have been here from her dream if I ever did see.